It's time for Toronto's Top Line.
Our assistant coach said, get on the scale and we're going to take numbers today. I got on. I said, I'll be back in 2 minutes. Can, back on, five spot, gone. Gone.
Wow.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan, Brendan Bell will join us here in a moment. Former Maple Leaf, former Ottawa Senator, doing radio work up in Ottawa. Look back on Game 2, Pittsburgh getting past the Sens, 1-0. Dion Phaneuf almost killed a guy. We haven't talked about that hit yet.
That was
yet.
A clean hit.
That was an unbelievable hit.
That
I love that hit, and I want more of those hits. And anyone that has an issue with those hits, please tweet me in advance so I can mute you on Twitter.
Anyone that goes on Twitter and says that's a headshot and should be suspended, you need to have an idea.
I mean, have an idea.
And you know exactly who I'm talking about.
It was a great hit.
It was a great hit, but this is what bothers
that's
me.
That's the kind of hit the league should be penalizing Phaneuf for. It's a headshot.
I mean, have an idea.
Yes.
Eckersley.
We exchanged that one last night, and I read it, and I'm like, just barf. Have an idea.
I mean, have an idea.
What bothers me about that is I wanted to celebrate the hit, but instantly I had to go.
There's losers like that.
But the parameters. Okay, is it clean? Is it, is it late? Instead of just going, hey, Russ had his head up his ass, and he comes through the middle and gets crushed.
I'm celebrating it. Openly celebrating it. I think I speak for 95% of the hockey world. I really do. I think 95% of the hockey world looks at that hit and says, please give me more of those.
But to be honest, Brian, that's what I thought too until I saw the raging debate on Twitter as to, Pittsburgh scribes saying,
Rob Rossi doing it again last night.
So you had it again?
Yes. I mean.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. You're a super fan. But the point being is, I didn't think that was a real massive debatable hit. I thought it was a good, clean, hard hockey hit. And I know we hate saying the hockey play and all of that, but you're allowed to hit in the game. It wasn't late.
If the guy has the puck and he's coming through the middle and you come through the middle and hit him and your skates do not leave the ice, that's it. It's over. There's no argument.
It was a textbook hard hit. And I think people who don't realize how hard that hit is from Phaneuf as far as to execute timing-wise. I said on SportsCenter, Owen and I did a hit. If Phaneuf mistimes that hit, we are talking about a potential suspension today because there is an art to hitting, and not everyone can do it. And that's why you don't see hits like that too often because, first of all, guys don't put themselves in that situation and go through the middle not paying attention. And secondly, the guy hitting, in his mind, he's going through a checklist too, going, I've got to make sure this is timed perfectly. If my head, if my elbow comes up, or if I end up projecting over the skates coming off the ice, like that type of stuff, it's.
Here's another thing we'd be talking about here, though. Is you're right. If he gets his elbow up, we're talking suspension.
Right.
But if a certain few want him to stick check, apparently, and he gets danced.
Yeah.
And then Rust ends up scoring.
And you lose.
We're talking about getting walked.
Why are you so soft at $7 million?
We're doing a hit on how bad of a play that was.
Exactly. Like, it's a must-hit situation.
It was.
It's a must-hit situation. It's a clean hit. The outcome, obviously, is not one that anyone wants to see. No one wants to see anybody get hurt.
You say
but guess
right.
what?
It's a
physical sport. Yeah, Guys get hurt.
When a defenseman cuts and makes a commitment like that, he's got to get one of two things, the puck or the body. He got the body. And that's his job.
It was.
And you still might get burned if the puck gets through you somehow, but you better take the body.
And Phaneuf had another massive hit. I think it was in the second period, too. He had two big hits. He was physical last night, but that was a textbook. And you think back to what Scott Stevens used to do. And
I think there's a real disconnect between what I find happening here. is there are certain members of the hockey community and certain members of the hockey media or the media in general that don't like that kind of a hit, don't like fights, don't like nastiness, don't like dirtiness. They right. don't like the Ryan Kesslers of the world. They don't like the Dion hits of the world. They don't like that kind of stuff. Yeah. But then at the same time, when the league doesn't put up big ratings in the States or the league doesn't translate to people or it doesn't get enough buzz or what have you, they take runs at the league because the league is not amplifying in popularity. Where what I think is the truth, and a lot of people don't want to admit it, and I think, honestly, the league probably knows this, but they're stuck between a rock and a hard place because player safety is such a prevalent issue now, as it should be,
right.
And concussion talk is omnipresent, and lawsuits are happening, so the game is naturally starting to move in a different direction, a safer direction.
Right.
They understand the importance of that. They understand the optics. But I think behind the scenes, the league is thinking, there's a lot of people out there that love the physicality, that love the fighting,
sure,
that love the smack talk, that love the stick work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about trying to mesh the two, the skill, the pace, the beauty of the game that you can sell, but also some nastiness, some yeah. physicality, the hatred. Like, that's the one thing that sticks out about the game today
uh-huh.
that has absolutely changed over the past decade. You don't sense hatred between teams anymore. You don't sense rivalries to the same extent. You don't sense that there's potential for confrontation
right.
at some point. And that's why this Kesler Johansson story is so interesting for me, because it's kind of a throwback.
Yeah,
I like the fact that these two guys are kind of talking smack, or that they don't like each other, and that this is clearly the main storyline going into Game 3 tonight.
But the problem is the world is...
It's actually interesting.
It is, but the world's trended in a way where you can't hurt his feelings. You can't do this and that.
You find the smack talk like fun, and you like the back and forth and the attention it's getting?
I love it.
You do?
I love it.
I don't
Don't
mind.
You?
I've told you before, it was never my thing. Jamie, I don't know if you like right. talking smack. I know Marty Baron was on the bench, and he was a mouthpiece. But it was never my thing. And I always say this to you. In this job, we like it because it's a topic.
Right.
But as far like if I'm in the locker room, I got to be honest. I'm telling both of them to shut up. Like, can you please shut up?
Right, and that's you guys in the room, in yeah. the game.
Hey, when I'm sitting here, do it all you want, because I'm going to talk about it for yeah. half an hour
it's
every day.
But that's what he's
but
saying.
But if I'm
that's
in the room, I'm like,
that's the entertainment part.
Totally, and
that's
I get it. Saying. I understand it, and believe me, I said this yesterday. If I was Peter Laviolette, I wouldn't love that Ryan Johansson went public with was saying what he said
right.
about Kesler.
Right.
Now, we disagree on that, but me, if I'm putting myself behind the bench or in the room, I would look at it differently. But I'm not in the room.
Right.
I'm a guy seeking entertainment. I'm a guy sitting on the couch competing with Jays games and NBA games and the lottery tonight.
Right.
What are you going to do to drag me into the series where I don't have a dog in the fight?
Yeah.
The Leafs aren't playing.
It's Kesler and Johansson.
Absolutely. I'm really intrigued to see what happens tonight.
Yeah. I 100% understand you, because what they're doing is probably distracting to you when you're trying to play your game. But what Brian is saying, from an entertainment value, that's what fans look for sometimes, is a storyline. Not just, hey, the star power and what goalie's going to make this save. It's the storyline within a potential seven-game series and the boiling blood hatred that... Isn't that why the NHL switched the playoff format, to have these rivalries? You play, you get these big... They've got a rivalry night.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things where you're looking to create... some bad blood where the emotions get high. And it's not about fighting, but it's about intensity.
But it can be at times. And if there is a fight, guess what? It's not the end of the world. These are grown adults that make the decision.
It isn't for me, but it made me sick to read on Twitter last night a guy say, try explaining that hit to the concussion in a concussion lawsuit. Well, Rust would have to say, yeah, I went through the middle with my head down and got hit legally.
It's a... physical sport. Like, that's the thing. You cannot.
It's actually full contact.
Full contact sport. They're moving yeah. at an incredible pace, and there's no out of bounds.
And I don't think anything.
Injuries are going to happen.
From a league standpoint, I don't think the league did anything wrong last night. Rust was removed for observation. He didn't come back. Yeah, I feel awful for him today, because he's a good young player, and I hope that that he recovers very quickly. That's, you're not wishing for injuries. You're not wishing for bad things to happen to anybody. But sometimes it happens in a split second where somebody puts himself in a bad position and somebody else takes advantage of that and hits him, and you move on. And I don't think Dion Phaneuf woke up today going, man, I'm glad I got rust and potentially hospitalized him. He took advantage of a play where that's a defenseman play, and like we talked about it, if rust walks around him and Phaneuf reaches out and tries to poke check him, we're talking about a bad defending job by Dion Phaneuf. So you're allowed to make that play. It's the legal parameters. I was shocked to see, I guess, some of the non-traditional hockey people really get worked up about that hit last night.
Exactly. And that's the dilemma that the league is dealing with, is that should be highlighted in a way or marketed in a way. Hey, this is our sport. This is how different our sport is than any other sport. This kind of stuff can happen. But because of the injury, it becomes so sensitive.
Right.
Because of the concussion, because he left the game, all of a sudden you can't approach it in a celebratory way.
Right.
You have
because
to be
it's a hot button
sensitive
topic here.
To rust and the injury, which I understand. I get it. That's why
right.
you don't see the NHL putting that hit up on NHL.com or right. or on the front page of their website or whatever. But I'll say this. If he was fully healthy and he got right up and kept going, it should be up on
that
the front page.
Yeah.
That's a great hit. Yeah. It's a fun hit. It's a good hit. It's something that makes this game unique. It's something that makes the game itself interesting.
I agree.
Let's bring in Brendan Bell, former Leaf, former Sen. He's doing radio work in Ottawa, of course, for the Pre and the Post on TSN Radio in Ottawa. What did you make of the Phaneuf hit last night, Brendan?
Which one? There was a couple of them, wasn't there?
There was, yeah. The big hit on Rust.
The Brian Rust hit was fantastic. I thought that was shades of Scott Stevens on Kozlov way back in the day. But you're absolutely right. It, you know, like that was something that was celebrated in our game, you know, not only 5 years ago, but where we're at with head injuries and concussions and that stuff. You can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
How much of a dilemma do you think this is for the league? Because I find that there's a lot of people that speak publicly, like the four of us do on a daily basis, that look at the physicality, look at the potential rivalries, look at the potential confrontation that can come from a hit like that and soak it in. And they're like, okay, this is part of why I love this game so much. Yet because of the injuries, because of the impetus placed on player safety and the focus on concussions over the past handful of years, makes it very difficult for them to actually promote that part of the game. Do you think that they're maybe juggling how they're supposed to really handle a situation like that?
Well, they're juggling it. We're juggling it. You know, it's the same thing. I see a hit like that, and it jumps you out of your seat, and you think that is what we love about the game. But at the same time, you think about the long-term ramifications. And you know, it's the same thing as last round of Sidney Crosby. You know, he gets hit, and he's got a concussion. He's out again, and you go, man, like I really hope this doesn't affect him long-term. And it's too bad. You know, you hope it's not the end of his career. And he's back a game later. You just don't know. It's so that's the scary part about these head injuries and concussions is that you have no idea. You have no idea based on player by player, hit by hit, what's going to happen. You know, we've seen it and we've talked about it over and over here in Ottawa with Clark MacArthur. There's a lot of people that I've talked to inside and outside the media that, you know, aren't big on Clark MacArthur still playing and continuing his career. You know, the next hit could be his last. Or it might not be. You know, you really don't know.
Yeah, you're right.
Beller, we just a follow-up on that. We've all found it crazy how everybody has these passionate feelings about what Clark MacArthur should be doing when it's ultimately it's doctors and him, and that's it.
That's it. And frankly, the doctors don't know. You know, they can study, they can take scans, they can tell you what somebody else looks like, but they don't know how your brain is going to react and what you're feeling that day. And it's so gray and so complicated that, you know, it's hard to stay in the middle all the time, but that's what I try and do. And if Clark MacArthur can play and if he thinks that it's okay for his long-term health and the doctors give him approval, I'm all for it because, you know, Owen, you know, Noodles, like you only get so many chances to play this game. And if you think that you're okay, you should go ahead and do it.
I agree. Let's look at the Senators. You know, you've tracked them very closely. They've given up two goals in two games. Do you think going home last night they were satisfied with their first two performances in Pittsburgh? I know people are talking it's not the sexiest of hockey, but is Guy Boucher behind the scenes pretty happy with what they were able to accomplish in Pittsburgh?
You know, I think that it's been said over and over, and we talked about it last night on air, and I've talked about it today a couple of times too, that if you had a split, you know, you feel good about a split and all that stuff. But at the same time, personally, I think the Senators wasted an opportunity. They were really, really good defensively last night, and they just didn't give any push whatsoever offensively. They should have won. They could have won that game. They could have stolen that game. They could be up 2-0 in the series. They have, you know, they've been, it's been widely talked about how boring their style of play is. When they're playing well, and in some of the Boston series and some of the New York series, it was wide open. It was back and forth. You know, it was fun hockey. It was almost too fun. You know, like it came down to the wire a lot, and they won six games in overtime now. But last night was a case where they were really good defensive. They were tight. They didn't allow Pittsburgh very many chances. There was you know, very few high-quality scoring chances. But I feel like they might have left something in Pittsburgh. And, you know, 1-1 is a great position to be in. You know, you got three out of the next five at home. You stole home ice advantage, all of that. But I can't help but feel that they could be in a better position right now. They got to feel good keeping, you know, Malkin, Crosby, Kessel to two goals in two games. But they got to find a way to generate more.
They really do, Beller. And Duffy asked me the question on the panel last night. He said, is there such thing as an over-buy-in where they're just so focused on being back and having this system and protecting and their goaltender? It was like their skill guys, like the Stones, Turris, Hoffmans, Bobby Ryan, like they were never skating forward. They were always skating backwards, and those guys need to be skating forward. If you remember Game 5 in Ottawa, we talked before the game, and they put up five against the Rangers that game. They were on fire offensively. They were in the forecheck. They were creating. They weren't skating backwards.
Yeah, and we watched that game, you know, the same night in the building. And when they're going, and Erik Karlsson, you know, everybody knows this, but Erik Karlsson is the pulse of that team. And when Erik Karlsson goes, everybody else goes. But a lot of the Ottawa Senators, it's just they're opportunistic. You know, like they're not a boring hockey team. They've got guys like Karlsson, like Hoffman, like Stone, like Turris, like Brassard, like Bobby Ryan, that are very, very talented players. You've almost got to get them on a night where everything's going the right way, where Karlsson is going, and he sets the temperature for that team, I think. And last night, and it was the same early in the Boston series, it was the same early in the New York series, where he's almost feeling things out, you know, and it's not until he lets loose that everybody else lets loose as well, because Erik Karlsson was very quiet last night. You know, yeah. One shot on goal, one missed shot attempt. Other than that, you know, he was 26 and a half minutes, but he wasn't the impact player that we've seen, you know, through the rest of the playoffs and that I expected he'll be going forward. I just think that they're not a boring hockey team when they're playing, you know, and when they're going. And last night they weren't. They had no motor offensively.
Yeah. Slide over to Pittsburgh. You played with the O-Dog. Was he like Phil Kessel on the bench?
He was like Phil Kessel in the dressing room. O wouldn't be the kind of guy that would call a guy out with cameras on like they were now. He's too smart for that stuff. You know, he wouldn't be a social media sensation. You know, like we took Mike Sullivan's presser live last night on the post-game show, and watching him try to spin out of that was something else. And he made a comment that, you know, I think it's good for our team. It's good to see Phil get going, and the guys get a pretty good laugh out of that when he gets going. And I couldn't agree with that more. You know, like, I mean, the GIFs and some of the video of that stuff that's on social media today is fantastic, of Phil losing on the bench. But that's not good in game. You don't want to see that. You don't want to have two of your top guys going at each other like that, because it wasn't a one-shift thing. If you missed me there, I was wide open. It was constant. It was every shift for a little while. And, you know, like the Ottawa Senators are in a pretty good position here, not only being up 1-1, or not only being tied 1-1, but the Penguins look frustrated. You know, Crosby's been pretty quiet the first two games. Kessel and Malkin are going at it. I think that if I was the Ottawa Senators, I'd be feeling better than I was at the start of the series right now.
Great stuff, Brendan. Always appreciate you doing this. Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys.
Brendan Bell, former Leafs, Sen, and doing radio work with TSN Radio in Ottawa. I think he's absolutely right. If you're Ottawa, you have to be playing that tape and thinking, man, we are getting into these guys' heads. And right. Furthermore, Justin Schultz gets injured last night, leaves the game. If he's not ready to play tomorrow night, it's Schultz, Daly, Letang, all out of the lineup, that's three of their top four defensemen. So I'm curious to find out if Guy Boucher changes his game plan at all, because it's been effective, man. It's been effective, but wouldn't a part of you be thinking, if I get a bit more aggressive here, we can really expose this defense corps in Pittsburgh?
I know, but you could do that for two shifts, and Geno Malkin and Sidney Crosby could end up with two-on-one situations. It ends up in the back of your net, and you're saying to yourself, what the hell were we thinking?
Yeah, it's almost like they've...
Just do what you do and try to create more offense. Once the puck turns over, go.
That's right. I felt last night before Phil scored, I thought Ottawa was going to mold one out. Because all it was going to take was one chance, one shot. And you know what it's like. The goalie at the other end is making saves and everyone's blocking shots. And they come back down and there's somebody falls and it's a two-on-one or a puck bounces over a stick and all of a sudden you get an opportunity and the game's over. And if you would have told me after the first two games, Pittsburgh would have scored two goals in their own building against the Ottawa Senators. And you would ask me what the series is at? Like, 1-1 is pretty
Pittsburgh's
lucky.
Pittsburgh's
kind
of lucky. Well, absolutely.
Now, Craig Anderson was great both games. Let's not forget. He made some great saves, but Ottawa was outstanding in front of him.
Well, I think two narratives were killed, or two conversations and two debates were killed with Kessel scoring that goal. The first one is Kessel and Malkin, is that issue going to carry over the series?
Do they hate each other?
Because all of a sudden you realize, okay, he scored anyway. It's all good. They're smiling. They're laughing. Who cares? It happens.
Right.
The two of them are going at it, even though it's not ideal. Clearly, they clearly could work through their differences because Phil ends up scoring the winner, and Malkin was the one who passed it to him once they got into the zone. The second one was any blame being directed towards Fleury, because you're right, Noodles. If he gives up a bad goal, people say, you had nothing to do all night.
Right.
How could you let in a goal against that
team? Which I'm sure all goaltenders would say sometimes those are the toughest nights.
It is the toughest
nights. You're
just
sitting there picking your ass, and there's no shots coming.
That's why I always give a lot of love to Marty Brodeur and Chris Osgood and even Marty Turco.
Marty Brodeur, man.
He faced 18 shots a night.
That guy had some nights. Remember that Leaf playoff game they had?
Didn't he have 11 shots?
Seven.
I think it was seven or eight shots.
Seven.
He had seven shots against in a game.
The Leafs in a playoff game, Noodles. The Leafs, I believe it was in Toronto.
No, it was in Jersey.
Was it in Jersey?
It might have been the game after Domi basically elbowed the head right off of Niedermeyer. And I think it was the next game. And I was watching it like seven the whole night?
And I'll bet you five of them were from the blue line.
But that's
line.
What I'm saying. So five are from the blue line, but two are good shots. And if you're not on, you got to make those saves. That I always felt it was really tough mentally. I played in St. Louis in 99. We won the President's Trophy. And it was, we didn't give up a lot of high-quality chances, and we didn't give up a lot of shots. We always outshot teams, and we carried the majority of the play. But you could always count on at least one or two 10-bell chances where a puck jumps over a stick or a missed assignment, and you had to make those saves. If you didn't, you'd lose the game, or you were chasing the game. And it was a different mental makeup, but that's why I look at Fleury last night, and even in his media afterwards, they asked him, like, what did you do during that 20 minutes where he said, wait. You just watched and wait. It was funny, but it was true. He was just sitting there watching the other end going, what's going on? And the longer it went, I felt that's what Ottawa was going to grease one out.
The Maple Leafs have signed a couple of Swedish free agent defensemen. We'll tell you about that. And there's some controversy in Nashville leading up to Game 3, and it has nothing to do with either team. We'll tell you about that next.
I just picked up a little nugget from the calf that might be my new fave thing.
Really? What's that?
A blueberry muffin. You hate a blueberry muff.
I don't like blueberry muffins.
I hate blueberries.
I hate carrot muffins and blueberry muffins. You know what I like?
Blueberry muffin.
What's wrong with you?
Moving on.
I don't know.
Let's just
move on. He made a face. and caught me off guard.
Moving on.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I'm not a fan. What I hate about blueberry muffins
yes.
is that they have a tendency to resemble chocolate chip muffins.
Yes, yeah, so you go to buy a chocolate chipper and you bite into a blueberry.
There's nothing worse. It is the worst possible thing you could go through.
No, I'll tell you something worse out of that calf. You buy a chocolate chip oatmeal cookie and you bite into an oatmeal raisin because the raisin looks, and they've mislabeled it.
Right.
Oatmeal raisin? I hate those cookies.
See, I'd rather a raisin than a blueberry.
I'll agree with you there.
I don't mind a raisin. I can get behind a raisin. Now, if you're in the mood and you're jonesing for a chocolate chip, you're going to be disappointed regardless.
It just rattles my cage.
That's an interesting question. What is more aggravating to deal with, biting into a blueberry muffin when you thought it was a chocolate chip or an oatmeal raisin instead of oatmeal chocolate chip?
Or a Tinder swipe and you come up feeling screwed over. Why you know what I'm saying.
I don't know if you can put that in the muffin talk, though.
Yeah, it's a little bit off the beaten
the
path.
Tinder swipe.
Speaking of Tinder, did you see the Pens fan with the sign that said Carlson pays for Tinder?
No, I didn't see that.
That was like their chirp. That was like they had a cardboard cutout or whatever.
That's funny.
And I guess that's like the new age chirping. I don't know.
Pays for Tinder.
Check out his girlfriend if you'd like.
His fiance.
He doesn't need anything.
Yeah.
Ever, ever, ever.
Yeah, I think he does all right.
I can't imagine he's on Tinder. I would think if he was and he was single, he might break that app.
Yeah.
Like Carlson in Ottawa, you talk about bar play. That cat could bring it to a different level, I would think.
Carlson in Sweden, too. Those guys are very, very popular in their homeland.
Mm-hmm.
Like Mats in Sweden?
Apparently Mats in Sweden is off the, like you've never seen.
He would have been cheater. He would have been cheater.
You would probably know this better than I would, but my understanding is, like if that golden era of Swedes coming in with Forsberg and Naslund and the Sedins a little bit after, like Sundin was the king, like of all of them, that's why he was always the captain. Like at all of the major events in the Olympics and everything, Mats Sundin was the king of the county.
He was the guy.
In Sweden. That was the guy that Alfredsson looked up to. Like, even Lidström, who I believe is the same age or potentially older.
He was the man.
Like, it was always Mats.
Yeah.
They went back and played for Sweden. It was like, okay, you're the guy speaking on behalf of the team because you kind of own the country.
It's interesting.
And I wonder if the Leafs factored into that.
I think I've told you this, but after they won the gold medal, the Fergler was like, I can't confirm or deny, but I don't want you going to the ceremony in Sweden. I want you to come back home. We have a game.
I can't confirm or deny that I don't want you to do it.
Mats was like, wrong, Ferg, wrong.
Like, what would John Ferguson Jr. possibly say to Mats Sundin?
Dude, he was such a tool. Losses in a row, he'd be like, I can't confirm or deny this, but we need to look at the seating on the airplane.
To change things up?
Like, it's just, ugh. If I told you the horror stories.
Yeah, it is. It wasn't good.
No, it wasn't. All right, we'll get to this Nashville story in just a minute and the Leafs signing a couple of Swedes. Actually, let's do that right now. I'll save this story for a little bit later because Chris Collinsworth, I guess, was speaking with, I think, HBO about what Cutler and Romo, what they have upcoming because they're going to step into the booth. Really interesting advice and probably something you guys could attest to as well. But the Leafs have signed a couple of free agent defensemen out of Sweden. None of us can sit here and tell you a lot about who they are because they've been playing in Sweden. You know, they're kids. And yet we had heard about this Callie Rosen kid. This report came out a couple of weeks ago that after the World Championships or towards the end of it, he would be signing here. And I had heard this Andreas Borgman potentially would be coming aboard as well. Rosen is 23 and Borgman is 21. Borgman just won the Swedish Hockey League's Rookie of the Year. He's 6 feet, 200 pounds, put up really good numbers in the playoffs. And again, he's 21 years old. Rosen, not the biggest guy, but apparently somewhat of a two-way guy himself, also playing over there in Sweden. And it's just two contracts, right? Like you're talking entry-level deals. I'm sure what they're hoping for is that they stumble across the next Nikita Zaitsev.
Right.
But because Zaitsev came and did what he did and made such an impact off the hop, at the same time, I would suggest that the Maple Leafs try to tamper or basically
temper expectations
here because again maybe one of them steps in and plays right away and plays really well, but maybe they go the conventional route and come back and play with the Marlies for a year.
And then you're throwing it against the wall to see what happens. I think they've been pretty good so far with going over there. They got Zaitsev, Soshnikov's a good player.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
They had that one kid from Finland, I think. He was a right-handed shot. He turned out to be a nothing bust, but...
That was before this crew, though, I think.
It might have been.
Yeah, that was the previous crew. I don't remember his name, but I remember who you're
talking
about.
I think that hit or miss, they're going to find some guys that... And you have to go the non-traditional route if you're continuing to build. This is the one luxury the Maple Leafs have. They have a core already in place. Now you're starting to build around that core. And you know, I would argue even guys like Soshnikov, they're high energy in that, but I don't... When I see the Toronto Maple Leafs winning or going on a deep playoff run, I'm not convinced that Soshnikov's in the lineup.
He might not be, but I also think he could be.
He could
He's a fourth line guy. Those guys are so interchangeable. Like, who's on the fourth line in Ottawa? Who's on the fourth line in Pittsburgh? Who's on the fourth line in Anaheim? Could Soshnikov be playing tonight for Anaheim or Nashville? Yes, I could see that being the case.
Well, it depends on the dynamic. If you actually look at the depth of teams, though, like, I know people don't love, like, Cody McLeod or Austin Watson. Those are who are playing in Nashville. But McLeod was picked up for a reason, for some presence and some toughness. Like,
he's the Matt Martin of that team.
Right. Same thing. Austin Martin's a... I think it's Austin Watson, sorry, is a really good big player in Nashville. Like, that's the type of dynamic they went with. Soshnikov can be. You're right.
Like, I'm just saying, I don't know what he's going to be. And let's be honest, by the end of the year, A, he was injured, but B, when he returned, they weren't taking Kapanen out of the lineup anyway.
Right.
So he wasn't even in the lineup for the Maple Leafs.
That's what I'm saying. I think
team, but
I think you start to look a little deeper and surround players. Like, that's why... You know, a guy like Zach Hyman could end up farther down in your lineup when the dust settles, but that's not a bad thing because we're seeing teams have three lines deep or four lines deep and get production out of them. And that's where I think a guy like Hyman would come in.
Well, they're taking a bit of a gamble, but not really here. I mean, they're using two of their 50 contracts on these two Swedish players, but I think you've also got to give them credit in terms of how they're selling their program to players.
Right.
Because I don't know what these guys are going to be, but I would assume the Leafs weren't the only team talking to them.
Right.
You have to believe if you've got two pretty good defensemen in Sweden, there'd be a bunch of teams that would be willing to talk to them and willing to give them an opportunity. And the Leafs found a way to sell these two guys on both coming over.
Yep.
And they did that with Zaitsev. They did that with Soshnikov. Now, Soshnikov, my understanding is, was more of a find, more of a... They had to go kind of deeper into the books and find him, and it was kind of Hunter being told about him by someone else that he knew in Russia or whatever. But Zaitsev was fairly touted, and he chose the Maple Leafs, and now these two guys. So,
and don't underestimate the Austin Matthews factor. You look at Edmonton, Lucic, obviously the years were there, the money was there. But I'm pretty sure Connor McDavid, being who he is, was a major factor in him saying, I could attach myself to this for a couple of years and see what happens. Although he didn't spend a whole lot of the year on his line, it's still,
well,
you're riding the wave.
From a Swedish standpoint, too, you know they're talking about Nylander over there and what this kid is doing and how he appears to be the next great young Swedish player.
But that's, you look at depth charts, too, and where you think, I mean, if I'm a young defenseman, Am I signing in Nashville, or am I looking at Toronto and saying there's opportunity there on a good up-and-coming team with a superstar up the middle, but, hey, on the back end, I'm not seeing Drew Doughty.
I'll tell you what. There's one kid I like, this Montour out of Anaheim.
Yeah, Brandon Montour.
This guy.
He plays a little bit reckless, but I like
if
that.
If he just – I'm not going crazy here, but – when Carlson broke into the league, he was a little bit reckless and all over the place. You could tell he had some talent, and then he kind of grew into what he is now. This guy's – I'm not a scout. I'm a brutal executive in the league, but I just think he has a ton of potential.
He can skate like the wind, man, and he's got great edge work. There's a lot of different things he has going for him, but I kind of see a little bit of Gardner in his game as well, to your point.
Yeah,
like, he can be a bit reckless. He can get caught out of position. I don't know if he's overly physical. Not that you have to be.
No.
If you're skilled enough and,
I like
and
the
capable
Manson
enough.
Kid. I like the Josh Manson.
I'll take him, too.
But that's
two different ends of the spectrum,
but that's,
though, the way they play.
I like them all on Anaheim's D-man.
They're loaded. Anaheim
Dude,
and Nashville
every one
are
of their
loaded.
Guys. But that's Theodore.
we love the GOAT, but every time I watch Shea Theodore, I think of one thing. He was drafted after the GOAT.
Yeah.
So was Burakovsky, and they haunt me when I watch them. We love the GOAT.
Well, we'll see. If the GOAT didn't have this injury, I think he'd be chasing down some minutes in the NHL next year. But we'll see. We'll see what the Leafs have to say about these two players as well, because Zaitsev, you knew when he signed, he was playing. He was stepping right in. He was at the World Cup. He was a big part of Russia's team.
Yeah.
He was going to be given every opportunity. I don't know enough about these two players, but I don't get the impression like the Leafs would be guaranteeing them spots on the big club.
No.
But give them a chance to come into camp and see what they can do. And it might tell you about what they're thinking in terms of their offseason as well. Like, how many deals are they looking to make? How does this affect if they sign Hunwick back, if they bring Pollock back? Do they feel like one of these two guys or both can fight for positions? Does that mean Marinson becomes expendable if anyone would even want him?
Right.
Or Marchenko, or, you know, whatever it's going to be. So it's just two more bodies being added to the list. But credit the Maple Leafs for finding a way to sign them. And we discussed what Marner and Nylander are doing at the World Hockey Championships right now. Marner put on a clinic this afternoon. I think he's up to 11 points in seven games. Nylander's at 10 points in seven games. Now, it's the World Hockey Championship. It's not the Stanley Cup Final.
Right.
But these kids are also 20 years old, and they put up great numbers this past year. And the best of the bunch is sitting in Scottsdale right now in Auston Matthews.
Yes.
And we threw out the hypothetical of how many teams in the league would be able to offer a three-pack of players to trade straight up for Matthews, Marner, and Nylander. The one we all agreed upon right off the hop was McDavid, Dreisaitl, Klefbom.
Mm-hmm.
Someone tweeted in, what about Kucherov, Stamkos, Hedman?
That's a pretty good three-pack.
That's a pretty good three-pack.
I mean, and plus, the offer, you don't have to accept.
It's a very good three-pack.
You don't have to accept the offer, but it has to be in that stratosphere.
That's what we're saying.
That's what I'm saying. Because when I went down Winnipeg, I looked at Scheifele, Laine, and let's say Trouba. Like, those are three real good players. You may not accept that trade, but you're looking at teams and saying, okay, what do they have?
And it's a testament to what the Maple Leafs are doing here in what they have access to. That these
right.
three players, albeit only a year, and that's the difference between comparing what they're doing and what a lot of other teams are doing. We know more about Scheifele. We know more about
right.
Trouba. Clearly, we know more about Hedman and Stamkos, et cetera.
Right.
And there is an element of gambling here in terms of what their future is actually going to play out like. I'm pretty confident Matthews is going to be a beast for a long time. I'm not as confident, but I am fairly confident Marner and Nylander will continue to be very confident players and very productive players. But three guys with 60-plus points in their rookie years and continuing it over at the World Hockey Championships, you're talking about a three-pack that is up there, that stacks up really well with every other high-end three-pack in the league.
Well, yeah, you can
I know it's kind of crazy to say it that way.
Goudreau, Monahan, and Brody or Hamilton?
No.
Not for me.
Matthews is better than Monahan. Goudreau is a beast, clearly.
Goudreau is better than any of those two wingers.
Right now he is, for sure.
Now.
I'm not convinced he will be.
I think they're the same type of player.
Yeah, I think Goudreau's unbelievable. He's a great player.
Dougie Hamilton's a 40-plus point defenseman, or TJ Brody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's, I'm just saying, three packs.
You could go down the list. Every team's got a three pack.
You just,
but I don't think they have not every team has a three pack that stacks up with.
In a salary cap era, every team has basically got a six pack because that's what their core is,
yeah.
right?
But and, like Colorado, like Arizona, what would their, beyond Ekman Larson, who's
Max
their,
Domi,
yeah.
Duclair,
yeah.
No, thank you. Like Colorado, no. McKinnon, Duchesne, and
Dvorak,
thank you. Detroit, what's their three pack? Like, there's some teams that do not have a three pack.
And you know what? If you don't have the three pack, you are not even relevant.
That's why you're in the lottery. Who? But Vancouver? Who would they have?
Bo Horvat.
Well,
and who?
Tramkin just left.
Tanev, I don't even know.
Exactly. Like guess what? This is
there.
Exactly where the Leafs were 3-4 years ago.
No, there are guys there. We're just drawing a blank.
But not to this extent, though, Noodles. Of course,
I can give you three names.
You're
acting like all three of these guys are superstars right now. They're not. Mitch Marner and William Nylander are not superstars. There are good players that have the potential to be there. Auston Matthews is a superstar. So that's where I'm trying to temper a little bit of, you know.
Okay, but you just said there are guys there. Give me a three-pack in Vancouver that can compare.
No, I didn't go to Vancouver. I'm just looking
Arizona,
around.
Arizona.
But it just depends. Like, okay, so was it Taves, Kane, and Keith or Crawford? Like, there are teams, and Chicago got swept in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would argue that there's more three packs than there's not. There's probably only five or six teams that wouldn't be able to put up a three pack.
That is comparable to the Maple Leaf one. Is that what you're saying? If you're an executive in the league, you believe that you could come up with 20 teams that you would take their top three players over the
not
least
over.
Three?
But what I was saying, comparable. Because in L.A., you take Kopitar, Doughty, and Quick. But what you're going to say is, oh, these guys are young and these guys are old.
Well, exactly. But I mean, it depends on where you are as a team. And if you're talking about the Maple Leafs, then...
But every team has those three type of elite players other than the couple that we just pointed out. That's what I'm saying. I really wholeheartedly believe that. Now, different scenarios... Matthews is a centerman, and I wouldn't take him over X player X or player Y. That's just the truth. Like, that's not putting a damper. I'm just looking around the league and saying, you know, Tampa put their – Washington's got that. You know, does Philly have that? Do the Rangers have that?
I don't know, man. I really don't. Like, the compare – again, I'm talking about comparing.
Well
– you can't give me three players on Philly that I would take over Matthews, Marner, Nylander.
It's not taking over. Who are comparable? Claude Giroux is comparable to Auston Matthews. Is he not?
I don't think so. I think Matthews is clearly better.
He is their comparable, but I wouldn't take him over Auston.
Okay, sure. Like,
that's
so
what I'm saying.
Barkov, you know, of course. But if we're talking about this and we're following through on it, who would you seriously take, Matthews or Giroux?
Right now, Auston Matthews, but what you're doing is this guy's coming off of 40, all of one season at 40 goals. If he scores 28 next year and has an off season, then you're going to be taking it a little bit different. That's my point.
Okay, I hear you, Noodles.
And Jacob Voracek is a hell of a player. So is Braden Schenn. And is Provorov a guy? Like, all I'm saying is every team has at least a three-pack.
Well, I can give you three guys. Of course you can.
Right.
But the question was, who would you trade Matthews, Marner, Nylander for? And you're not giving me many answers. I mean,
Ben Sagan and Klingberg?
I don't know. He had a down year, Klingberg. Like, he's a good player, I think. But
yeah. No, I'm going through
anyway.
Just quickly as we go through teams. I'm just trying to.
Like the Islanders outside of Tavares, who are you throwing in there? Jersey's
Hamannik.
Got nothing. Carolina does not have three that come
close.
Well,
hold on. Jersey has Corey Schneider and Taylor Hall. Those are two elite players. You just need to look for a third.
Exactly. I know you're trying to like counter this and be a contrarian.
All I'm saying
but
is that
even
is,
you could
guys,
admit
but
they got
acting
three really
that
good
Mitch
players.
Marner and William Nylander, that every team doesn't have one of those two.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Every team doesn't have those two.
I believe every team has at least.
You think every team in the league has two guys that are equivalent?
Just as good as them? Absolutely.
Really?
Almost. I would say 25 out of the league.
Okay.
Taylor Hall is just as good as Mitch Marner.
Okay, I got you one. Name the other guy on the team.
On who?
Hall scratches out Marner. Who's the Nylander on
Corey Schneider is better than.
Okay, well, a goaltender.
Doesn't matter. You're just talking about players.
Okay, then who's the third?
I don't know.
Exactly.
But we're taking that out.
We're going to take a short break.
No, we're going to continue with this conversation, believe
me.
Why? After a short break.
Because I'm going to get you to admit that the Leafs are in a good spot with these three players.
They are in a very good spot, but all I'm saying is...
We're getting the signal.
All right,
we're going to take a break, and we're going to continue this.
All right, Bobby Mack will join us at 6:20. He's already in Ottawa ahead of the game tomorrow night. NBA draft lottery tonight. We got sidetracked there, but we will get into this Nashville Predators anthem singer. There's beef down in Chris Collinsworth with what I would say is very sound advice for Jay Cutler and Tony Romo as they pursue their broadcasting career. That and more coming up in the final hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050.